This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm News Director Sarah Bohannon. Today we're looking into what you can do while protesting to help reduce the spread of COVID-19. A group of medical experts has put together some guidelines. We'll hear more on what they are and why they think they're important. If you have questions or comments for us, leave them on our message line, 433-9216, or go to our website, mynspr.org. For Thursday, June 4th, 2020, this is special coverage from North State Public Radio. First, some news.
For NSPR News, I'm Mark Albert. 9 more North State residents have been infected by the COVID-19 virus, according to local public health officials Thursday, a day after 10 new infections were found in the 11-county region. 5 new cases were found in Butte County, 3 in Sutter, and 1 in Tehama County, a man in his 20s. That puts the total across the 11-county region at 232. At least 7 are currently hospitalized, 9 have died. Butte County now has confirmed 60 cases. In Sutter County, 51 cases have been found. In Shasta County, 40. In Yuba County, 31. The number of cases in Glenn County is 17. In Siskiyou County, 9. Both Colusa and Tehama counties each have 7. Lassen remains at 5, Plumas at 4, and Trinity County at 1. Statewide, the number of deaths blamed on the coronavirus in California rose to 4,361 on Wednesday. The California Department of Public Health announced another 75 state residents had succumbed to the illness. A total of 477 have died over the past week, as fatalities continue rising by 12% per week, according to the most recent figures available. The department also recorded 2,377 new infections Wednesday, sending the total in California to 117,687. The number of patients continues rising at a rate of 19% per week. Close to 19,000 Californians have tested positive over the last 7 days. The virus is also taking a heavy toll on medical workers. The department reported Wednesday that nearly 10,300 healthcare workers have contracted COVID-19 and 63 medical professionals have died from the virus in California. About half of Californians believe a more deadly second wave of the coronavirus is ahead, and fewer than 3 in 10 state residents believe current restrictions on public activities should be eased. That's according to a poll released late Wednesday by the Public Policy Institute of California. According to the poll, about half of Californians want restrictions to remain as they are, and a quarter want more stringent restrictions imposed. Nearly 60% of state residents fear they'll contract the illness and need hospitalization. The proportion who say they're very concerned is highest among lower-income residents. Impact of the virus on the economy is also rattling the Golden State. The poll found just over half of state residents say a member of their household had had their pay reduced or hours cut, and 35% report a layoff or a lost job in their household. As the pandemic continues, the nation is also gripped by the 10th day of demonstrations following the killing of George Floyd by Minneapolis police. Regionally, demonstrations continue to be organized in Redding and Chico, while nationally, organizers are predicting 1 million people will march on Washington this weekend. Thursday, a memorial service was held for Floyd in Minneapolis. In a eulogy, the Reverend Al Sharpton called for national political organizing down to the city council level to change police procedures. Here's an excerpt courtesy of the BBC.
George Floyd's story has been the story of black folks, because ever since 401 years ago, the reason we could never be who we wanted and dreamed to be in is you kept your knee on our neck. We were smarter than the underfunded schools you put us in, but you had your knee on our neck. We could run corporations and not hustle in the street, but you had your knee on our neck. We had creative skills. We could do whatever anybody else could do, but we couldn't get your knee off our neck. What happened to Floyd happens every day in this country, in education, in health services, and in every area of American life. It's time for us to stand up in George's name and say, get your knee off our necks.
For NSPR News, I'm Mark Albert.
This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. Protests around the country over the killing of George Floyd and police brutality against Black Americans are expected to continue into the weekend amid the coronavirus pandemic. And public health officials are warning that new cases of COVID-19 will likely emerge due to the mass gatherings, protests, and unrest in cities and communities across the nation. The biggest concern is about asymptomatic carriers of the virus, who could unknowingly infect others at demonstrations, as social distancing is not always possible and sometimes is an afterthought during this time of civil unrest. To help lower the risk of being exposed to COVID-19 during mass gatherings, a group of health experts has put together a list of recommendations for protesters. To learn more, CAP Radio's host of Insight, Beth Ruyak, recently spoke with Dr. Bradley Pollack of UC Davis and a member of the group that created the guidelines. Pollack is a professor and chairman of public health sciences at UC Davis, as well as the associate dean of the department. He is also the chairman of the UC System's COVID-19 working group. Here's the conversation.
What have you been thinking as you see hundreds and thousands of people in protests all over the world right now?
Well, we're worried about a possible increase in spread of the virus when you see people that are congregating together closely and with variable adherence to recommendations like face masking, physical distancing. So we're worried about that. I want to point out that we actually did produce a guidance document that was done not officially through the University of California system or through our campuses, but as public health academics, we felt it was important to get a message out to try to improve the safety and decrease the risk of spread for people that are participating in civil protesting.
We are posting that document on our website. In a moment, we'll go through some of the specific recommendations that are not only for face masks, but for goggles as well. And you make recommendations to law enforcement, too. But how high is the level of risk? What can you and your colleagues say with any certainty right now?
Well, we can't say a lot. The problem is I don't think any of us have actually, I haven't at least, shown up at the protests myself. So I'm relying on seeing what's been carried in the news, looking at video that's coming from these protests. And I think it's a mixed bag. I think a lot of people, probably the majority of people, are being very smart about protesting, that they're covering their faces and they're maintaining distance between one another. I see that happening a lot, but I also have seen examples where that's not been happening. And so we worry a lot about the fact that people can get infected and easily. And the scare is that we don't know who's walking around, who is asymptomatic, but is capable of spreading the virus. And that's really the fear that we have.
So let's start with some of the recommendations to people protesting in, or at least joining a group in some way in this public place. I said face masks, yes. You're suggesting goggles, and you're suggesting carrying extra face masks to share with others and attending with people that you've sheltered in place with. Let's start with those.
Well, yes. Again, the purpose of which is to sort of prevent people from spreading the virus. The recommendations about wearing goggles really are to protect against tear gas and pepper spray. I realize these are deterrents, non-lethal deterrents that the police have used. And we're not saying that they shouldn't be doing that. We're not trying to make a comment on that. But one of the problems is if people are exposed to tear gas, for example, natural reaction is to put your hands to your face and to your eyes. And so that's a risk factor for picking up the virus. So we really were talking about trying to prevent spread to other people, as well as reducing the risk that people are going to be touching their faces, which is one of the things you don't want to do during the epidemic. And the other issue, of course, is people you've been sheltering in place with, there the issue is not as much of a concern to be close together because you're doing that on a natural basis. But this is really just a means of trying to prevent the virus from being transmitted to other people.
The language in the recommendations, in particular under the heading, how can law enforcement agencies reduce the risk of the virus spread, is more specific on the matter of tear gas and other agents. In fact, the word is that these may actually accelerate the spread of the virus. I know you just summarized it, but let's go back over that again, because you are suggesting that agencies might want to reconsider their protocols.
That's right. And again, we're not experts in law enforcement. I think it's just to be cognizant of the fact that use of some of these measures may induce behaviors that we don't want to see, which is, again, people touching their faces and, again, transmitting the virus. And that's one of the things. So we really would like law enforcement to be cognizant of that and to think about that in terms of developing their policies.
So let me stay with law enforcement recommendations for a moment. You add to this that procedures that are often used to subdue or arrest a protester can also be risky behaviors in the time of a pandemic and virus transmission. Would you expand on that?
Yeah, I mean, you do see typically when people are sort of put into arrest situations that they're sometimes, of course, there'll be the desire to remove face masks and so on. So that's subjecting these folks to a little bit higher risk, of course. Handcuffing, and sometimes you'll see folks being put very close together physically, again, for management purposes. And those are things that we would want to discourage. And there are other issues, too. I mean, sometimes individuals are put into crowded vehicles that may be not perfectly safe for transporting these folks without increasing their risk of viral infection. So those are some of the major issues. Of course, there's also issues with local jails. And I know early on in the epidemic, the Sacramento District Attorney's Office contacted me to help support a move to try to depopulate the jail as much as possible because of the increased risk of transmission in a confined space. So, of course, arresting more people is going to be something that would increase the jail population. So I think these are things, again, that are we want law enforcement to be aware of and to take into consideration in the procedures they're using to manage the situations.
I'm talking with Dr. Brad Pollack. He is among 9 UC leaders in both public health and medicine who have put together recommendations to minimize risks at protests. These apply to anyone involved in the scene in any way, citizens, law enforcement, journalists. In fact, at the beginning of this letter, Dr. Pollack, it says, no specific written safety recommendations for these activities have been developed to mitigate risk or to plan for an outbreak among anyone who attends as well as their household members. Is that what spurred the desire for all of you to come together and at least put something out there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it turned out we had a meeting on Monday, and in just our warm-up conversation, many of us had been contacted over the weekend and a little bit before the weekend by folks in the media to comment on the potential risk of increased infection in light of these protests that are going on. So we had actually tried to look for some guidelines. I have to say, I think this is probably the first time, certainly in our lifetimes, that we've had a pandemic raging and kind of over superimposed the civil unrest. And so we really were concerned about this issue. And again, it was brought to our attention a lot by the media, who were asking for our advice collectively about what to do, what are the considerations here. So that was what really motivated this. And again, these are guidelines that are meant to be sort of good advice, things to be considered. In no way do we want to have people not be able to exercise their First Amendment rights. And the situation has just been so outrageous that it's quite understandable, the rage and the need and the desire to be able to speak out. So we just don't want to see people adding to the morbidity and mortality because of that exercise of their First Amendment rights. That's really what our concern is.
You're suggesting notes that would be expected. If you feel sick, don't go. If you can at least space 6 feet apart, if you can socially distance, physically distance, it's wise to do so. To carry hand sanitizer. To self-quarantine when you get home, and you are recommending COVID-19 testing after attending a protest.
That's right, because we just don't know how much you've come in contact with asymptomatics, for example. And so those are sort of good housekeeping seal of recommendations in terms of what you do attending any large event with people that are there. You want to take all the precautions we can to sort of arrest the spread of the disease. So those are really kind of guidelines. They are applicable not just for protests, but any sort of large public gathering.
You're listening to special coverage from North State Public Radio. We'll hear more about how to reduce the spread of COVID-19 during civil protesting when we return. This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. Before the break, we were listening to a conversation between CAP Radio's host of Insight, Beth Ruyak, and Dr. Bradley Pullock of the Department of Public Health Sciences at UC Davis, speaking about a recently created list of guidelines to help reduce the spread of COVID-19 during civil protesting. Let's get back to the conversation.
There are a couple suggestions at the granular level, like don't share your cell phone as much as you might otherwise, and if you do share it, wipe it down with sanitizer or alcohol afterward. And to consider alternatives to the chanting, singing, and shouting your group suggests drums or noisemakers or signs. And part of that is, again, the speaking transmission that happens at an event, correct?
That's correct, yes. And now there's emerging evidence that loud talking, singing, these are things that increase the risk of transmission of the virus. And, of course, these were brought up in the context of religious gatherings and so on. But there's evidence emerging now that there's a higher risk of transmission engaging in those activities. So we wanted to at least cover that in our recommendations for people to be thinking about that and perhaps to express themselves in ways other than loud speaking, singing, chanting, or screaming.
Face masks. Sometimes most people are wearing them, sometimes not. How effective are they? How much is any kind of face mask going to be better than nothing?
Well, we think they're better than nothing, for sure. There are debates about how effective they are, but the primary reason for wearing the face masks are really to prevent you from potentially spreading it to other people if you are infected. That's the major role that they play. And this is, again, we're not talking about N95 masks worn correctly, where there's actually protection for the person wearing the mask. But this is really a way of trying to reduce the spread to other people. That's the reason for that. And there's been a lot of work done now to look at the types of face masks, materials used, what kinds of cloth, how porous is it. I think the recommendations are that certainly covering your mouth and nose in public with these coverings is going to likely have some impact on reducing spread.
You do make some suggestions to local public health agencies to help educate, to collaborate, to issue guidance. But I do want to get to what is the final paragraph in this letter of recommendations. And what's written here is this: COVID-19 has disproportionately harmed communities of color across the nation. First responders have also been affected due to their work. Everyone has a stake in reducing the risk of the spread of COVID-19 and this virus to themselves and to their families. You really are making this an individual responsibility in support of everyone around.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, we're concerned about the health of everybody, not just one group. And it's as important to protect the protesters as it is law enforcement, as it is to protect journalists that are covering these events and even bystanders. So we really, really intend this to be recommendations to sort of to definitely try to address the epidemic, trying to curb the epidemic. And again, it's unprecedented. We just haven't had a situation like this. Well, we haven't had a pandemic in our lifetime, and that's one issue going on. And then we've got this incredible charged environment right now with the death of George Floyd and just years and years and years, centuries of oppression for the African-American community. And so we're not making political statements or judgments about anybody's right to or need to express themselves, but we really want to try to keep people safe. That's really what public health is all about.
I think you heard me mention that the autopsy indicated that George Floyd had tested positive twice, in fact, for COVID-19, but was asymptomatic. Two points there I'd like you to comment on. Communities of color and this illness and what the ongoing research is showing. And number two, the fact that many people might be or will be asymptomatic. And so the virus keeps moving as sort of a hidden agent.
Yeah, well, on the first point, there's very clear evidence in our country that communities of color, African-American community in particular, has been severely impacted. And this may be mostly related to existence of comorbidities. The major comorbidities we're talking about are heart disease, hypertension, diabetes, and obesity. And there is a disproportionate prevalence of those conditions in the African-American community. And so this is just adding to that, which we don't need to have. It's not right to be able to have folks live through this extra risk. And with regard to Mr. Floyd being positive, there's an example, again, of somebody who wasn't symptomatic but is walking around. And so you just don't know. And that's why we try to think about this as taking universal precautions. You don't know if the person next to you is capable of shedding the virus and transmitting it. And so that's why we've been so effective at doing the social distancing, is that we basically lower our risk of being exposed by keeping that physical distance. And that's really the rationale for this and why California has been so successful relative to other parts of the country at trying to bend the curve.
So, Dr. Pollack, June is going to be a very telling month because as these weeks go on, we're going to see the impact of people who came out and were out and about and gathering more over the Memorial weekend, and then what followed, all the protests. I guess just in your own personal sense of what's ahead, what do you think we're in for as June progresses?
Well, I think, you know, one of the conundrums we have here is that we don't know what the effects are independently of what's going on with civil unrest and this spread, on top of reopening the economy, reopening businesses, and we will never be able to separate out those effects. But they're probably additive and not good. And we are seeing, you know, slight increases now in our area of COVID-19 cases. L.A. and San Diego and Orange County have also been seeing an uptick now of COVID-19 hospitalizations over the last couple of weeks. And so this is probably most related to reopening more businesses and having people spend time near each other physically. So we're concerned about that, of course. And the protests and what's going on there is very alarming to us, seeing that many people, not the majority, but many people are not following guidelines to stay safe. So we're concerned about that.
All right, I'm going to take one more pass at this because you are a professor, you're a chairman of the department, you're an associate dean, and you're leading the UC System's Public Health COVID-19 Working Group. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the most, how worried about the spread of COVID-19 or coronavirus are you right now?
Well, 9 or 10. I'm worried about it in general. A lot of us are, and I also fully understand and the impact that the shelter-in-place rules have had, with people being unemployed, businesses being closed down, small family businesses where everything's been invested in their future and their business being shut down. And there are harms that occur with the shelter-in-place rules in place and business not working and the economy crumbling, and there are harms involved with people gathering, being close to each other. And so it's just very, very difficult to try to balance all this off. But I think, you know, we're trying to provide some guidance about things we can do that will you know, mitigate or heavily reduce the risk of more spread. But I'm concerned about it, and I think all public health professionals are concerned about it.
Well, it looks like you're getting some backing, too, from New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo, who just tweeted, "Coronavirus tests are available to all protesters. We ask protesters to be responsible, wear a mask, get tested, act as if you may have been exposed." So there you go.
That's nice to hear.
Dr. Pollack, thanks for joining us. And there's a lot in this 5-page document. We are going to make sure we post it online for easy access for everyone.
Thank you, Beth. It's been a pleasure joining you again. Thank you.
That was Dr. Bradley Pollack. He's a professor and chairman and associate dean of the Department of Public Health Sciences at UC Davis. He is also chairman of the UC System's COVID-19 Working Group and a member of a team of health experts who created a list of things you can do to help reduce the spread of COVID-19 when you are protesting. You can find those guidelines at mynspr.org. Dr. Pollack was interviewed by Beth Ruyak, host of Insight at CAP Radio. And that is your program. As always, if you have any thoughts for us, leave them on our message line 433-9216 or go to our website, mynspr.org. Today's special coverage was produced by Mark Albert, Ken Duvall, Kristen Solis, Andre Bayek, Eric Radaville, Kylo Castilla, and Phil Wilkie. Our technical producer is Matt Fidler. Thank you for being with us. I'm Sarah Bohannon, news director at North State Public Radio, and this is Special Coverage. Tune in each weekday evening at 6:30 or catch the rebroadcast the following morning at 8:30. Until then, stay safe, stay informed, and stay tuned.